Hi, everyone. Welcome to this Coach Chat podcast. My guest today will be Mark Fasesky, a cycling coach and personal trainer from the Chattanooga, Tennessee area. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about some new changes here with the podcast. First of all, it is available on iTunes. If you go and search Coach Chat, two different words, two separate words, you can find us there. And also are partnered with Stitcher. And you can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And Mark, I want to thanks for taking time out of your schedule to sit down and talk with me. How about start off by telling folks how they can get in touch with you?
All right, sure. The first off, thanks for having me. People can get a hold of me either by email, and that email is Coach Mark, all one word, at Vantaggio Fitness, V-A-N-T-A-G-G-I-O, fitness.com. You can also get a hold of me on the website, which is VantaggioFitness.com. And that's probably the two best ways to get a hold of me. Initially.
And can people follow you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
You know, that's funny. You should ask that very question.
Is it Coach M. Faz?
It is Coach M. Faz.
I just Thank saw you. It the other day, so I cheated a little bit on that. But I know you're a good way. And Mark, how about what's the derivation of Vantaggio? It's such an unusual and Italian-sounding word.
It is Italian. When I was originally reorganizing my company with my wife, Kim. We were trying to throw around some different ideas of different catchy coaching type names for a company. And well, being Polish, I wanted some catchy Polish name, and she was having none of that. Way too many consonants. So we sort of settled on Italian, since there's so much Italian roots in cycling. And Vantaggio is actually advantage in Italian. So we thought that was little meaningful that if you came to us, we would give you the advantage you needed to reach the goals that you had set for yourself. So that's sort of a little bit background of what the Vantaggio means.
Hey, and while we're at, before I jump into the questions that we discussed earlier, tell us a little bit about what services Vantaggio Fitness offers. What can someone get from you guys?
Well, we offer multiple levels of cycling coaching programs. Anything from a hands-off, you talk to us about your goals and what you want to achieve, whether it's event-specific or health and fitness-based. And we will come up with a 12-week program specifically designed around those goals and then give that to you sort of as here's the program. And it has very minimal contact, and it's priced accordingly because of that. All the way up to, we offer very, very hands-on. We can come to your house a couple times a month, go doing a bunch of rides with you, pre-event, during event, post-event analysis, and we use both power meters mostly with our athletes. I would say probably over 90% of our athletes are utilizing some power meter out there on the market, but we also have athletes out there who train by perceived exertion and heart rate. So we do that in addition. So that's the sort of the cycling side specifically. And then, as you mentioned, I'm also a personal trainer certified with the National Strength and Conditioning Association. And I do, in the Chattanooga area, one-on-one training with clients, as well as I run a outdoor fitness boot camp that meets for 3 weeks at a time, 5 days a week, for 1 hour a day before work, so people can come out and get a very good high-intensity workout in first thing in the morning, then head off to work and you know, attack the world accordingly.
And do you guys still offer your nutrition consultations?
Actually, we are starting to phase that out a little.
Okay.
Which I don't know if I'm going to end up changing. We're going to maybe change the name a little bit on that. That was, so Kim was doing a lot of sports nutrition at one point, And then she decided to go back and get her master's degree in sports psychology, and now she's pursuing her PhD in the same field. So sports nutrition has really sort of taken a back as far as being a very big focus of the company, a sort of a back seat now, much more towards the sports psychology side of it.
Understandable. And just for folks who I usually lead into this, Mark and I have known each other years, and I've known his wife Kim for about as long, I think. I think I met you guys at the same time, come to think of it. And I hope to have her on a future podcast as well, maybe talking a little bit about coaching and sports psych and that sort of thing as well. Mark, how did you get into cycling, and then how did you get into coaching cyclists?
Well, I raced BMX for about a year and a half as a teenager, and I really sucked at it, and so that was depressing. And so I gave it up and picked up the much more competitive trumpet, and did pretty well at that, and cycling sort of took a back seat at that point, and started to pursue a career, college, and career in computer science, and then established myself doing computer IT industry work. And I had relocated. I grew up in Michigan. I relocated from Michigan to Las Vegas in 1994, and I was doing computer work for the government at the time. And I was dating a girl who wanted to get into mountain biking, and ironically enough, so she wanted me to go to a bike shop with her and sort of be the go-between, because between, you know, the salesperson and her, because she didn't want to feel intimidated. So we went to the bike shop, and even though the introvert that I am, I stepped up and made friends with the owner, and we talked a bit. And funny enough, neither that relationship or her want or interest in cycling continued. Whereas I ended up buying a mountain bike out of that, and then started riding. That led to me racing, and I had always had a big interest in training as far as anatomy and physiology and exercise science type of stuff, and so I was trying to figure out ways to train more efficiently, and so I started doing a bunch of research on it, and then that sort of progressed into my teammates at the time realizing that I was doing all this research and I had a bunch of information at coming and using me as a central point of reference for information or contact. Well, the capitalist in me came out. I said, wow, I'm doing a whole lot of work here and learning a whole lot of stuff and helping a whole lot of people and spending a lot of time doing it. You know, it'd be great if I could actually get paid to do this. So I looked up the coaching education program at USA Cycling. And, I started doing more research and found the coaching education program in cycling. And this guy by the name of Sam Callen up there who was trying to build a coaching education program. And in 1996, I went over to Phoenix to do, my introduction to coaching education, which at that time was
the club coach.
It was the club coach, right?
Yep.
Well, no, I did the club coach, sent that in. And then went to the sport coach. It was the sport coach, wasn't it?
No, sport. Yeah, it was a goofy system back then. And I was the director of coaching education at that time. And it was the sport coach was this sort of pseudo coach thing that you just basically sent in something you got, but it was never a coaching certification. And then it was club coach. And then actually, I think we met in Phoenix in '99 at the expert clinic.
Was it '99?
Yeah, Steve Thorson and Barney King. They were the really smart people there who knew what they were talking about.
Well, I was going to say, we met there in Phoenix and then sort of the rest was history as far as, you and Barney became good friends of mine and mentors. And, I just continued building and, education and the coaching and what it took to try to get a little bit more successful at it. And just continued on from there. And then I think it was in 2001, I went up to the Olympic Training Center for the level one or the elite is what it was called at that time. And luckily and thankfully passed my exam after a week worth of overload and headaches. and good times, and then, you know, went on from there. And then moved in 2002 to Chattanooga after I'd been dating my wife for a year, and moved here and got married and set up shop here.
You know, most people date and then they marry and the person becomes their wife. Rarely do you date your wife.
Yeah, I guess
okay.
I didn't say that right, did I?
Yeah. Okay. Now you're pursuing a master's degree in exercise science at UTC? We're going to change the name for there for a while. I always got kind of confused by that, but they're in Chattanooga, right?
It is UTC, and they are looking at changing the name, but I'm dabbling in some extended educational possibilities.
Excellent.
Although now it looks like that may happen over at UNC Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which also has a good program and there.
So we'll see how that all goes.
Well, I lived up the mountain from Greensboro for a while. I lived in Boone for a little bit, so I know a little bit about the area. In your coaching business right now, what types of athletes are you coaching? You know, juniors, masters, road, mountain bike. Give us a little taste of that.
Well, it's interesting because when I first started, I really got focused on junior development. Really interested in developing kids, and to this day, that's still a big focus of mine. However, I also made the business decision that I probably didn't want to be only nonprofit, so I expanded into a couple other things, and currently, we're running a pretty wide gamut of juniors to masters, mountain bike, road, and cyclocross. And although that sounds like that's a whole lot, it really isn't anymore, because you've got so many people that are doing, at least, especially with cyclocross getting so popular in this country, you're getting a whole lot of people that are coming from the roadside to cyclocross or the mountain bike side to cyclocross. So you're getting a lot of overlap there where you didn't have that before. And I've got a lot of people now who are doing road, mountain bike, and cyclocross. Mm-hmm. So the biggest challenge nowadays, at least for me, with my athletes, is more of how do we balance enough recovery into a three-season athlete, whereas you didn't have to worry about that before, which is exciting. It's good for the sport that it's still expanding and it's still drawing people in and that want to cross over between the disciplines. But yeah, that's one of the more challenging aspects to my job is making sure that we stay on top of managing the stress of and recovery of that athlete.
Yeah, because we're not talking that many years ago, and just a few years ago, that your roadies and even your mountain bikers kind of come the winter, you know, they backed off because there was nothing really to do. I mean, there wasn't a lot of racing to be done, and now they have cyclocross, which can be incredibly intense. You know, it's an hour, up to an hour, give or take, I guess, and of hard riding. And so I think that's a challenge for all coaches now with athletes who want to do, you know, they want to do everything because it's on the calendar. And I think that's a great challenge, is to figure out when you're going to take some time to make sure you just sort of re-energize yourself mentally and physically, and maybe even more on the mental side to some extent. And so I think that's one of the, I know there are coaches, and you know who I'm talking about here, who rail about cyclocross because it doesn't give high-level, really competitive athletes a chance to really recuperate from a hard season. And again, we're talking more pro Cat 1 folks than necessarily your Cat, you know, 3s and 4s and 5s, certainly. But I think that is a challenge that coaches face, and in trying to keep their athletes healthy year-round, and yet they want to be competitive because it's fun. And that's why most people get into this to begin with, is it's fun, not part of it.
Yeah, hopefully you're having fun, because if you're not getting a paycheck for riding, racing your bike, you sure as heck better be having some fun.
Absolutely right. Now, I would say that goes for any, you know, triathlon, running, whatever it may be, that, yeah, if you're not getting a paycheck, and even on a little tangent here, even professional athletes who are getting paychecks will typically walk away when that level of fun is completely diminished and completely worn out. I've had the pleasure of knowing high-level endurance athletes for a number of years now, and it's like, why'd you retire? It seemed like you still could have gone. Yeah, it just wasn't fun anymore. You know, getting up at, you know, depending upon the athlete, you know, in their sport, getting up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning to go maybe to the pool to swim just wasn't fun anymore, or getting up for those, you know, early morning interval workouts for, you know, my running buddies, you know, just not fun anymore. I, you know, I don't want to do that anymore, or the jet-setting travel that some get to do that's not as glamorous as we all think it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, and interestingly that you bring that up, because I just saw or read about an interview, didn't see it, read about an interview with Robbie McEwen, who yesterday raced his last race as a pro racer at the Tour of California. And one of the things he said, you know, they said, why now? I said, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, at a certain point when it's cold and rainy and windy out, I just don't have that desire to get up before the sun and go out there and beat myself and flog myself for, you know, 4 to 6 hours in that kind of weather, when I'd much rather be with my family, having family time and doing other things. He says, you know, and I finally, finally had to make a decision of I had asked myself, why am I doing this anymore? Yeah. You know, and as much as he said, as much as he loves the sport, at a certain point, you know, cycling, even at the most elite level, being some of the best in the world, it's still just a small slice of the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think that's good. And every athlete comes to that realization at different points in their lives and what they want to do with it. And we always hope those athletes stick around in the sport in some form or passion as an advocate for it, or involved in their organizations. Or, you know, I always thought that, you know, in so many U.S. sports, it seems like retired athletes become coaches. And I was listening to an interview, a writer for Sports Illustrated had just done an interview with Tim Duncan of the San Antonio Spurs, and they asked him, did he want to become a coach? And he just kind of chuckled. And I'm thinking, why would you want the headache of that? Like, why would you want the headache of being a team director? You know, after you've been a pro for so long, you know the bad side to it, and the travel and all the other stuff. And it's like, why would anyone want to do that? You know, but plenty do. And certainly, you know, that's where, you know, many of them come from. So there are folks who want to take on that task. But, man, you just think, you know, being the head of any team just seems like it would bring far more headaches than it does benefits. But I may just be cynical on that point in my life. I can't help but put this pun out here, and talking about cycling here, let's switch gears for a bit. And, wait till I throw in a trumpet thing. I'm trying to work on working trumpet in somewhere here too.
Great.
You know, you worked with young cyclists. I know you've been involved in the USA Cycling Junior development camps, but they're basically juniors, and also involved in the Tennessee programs there for junior cycling. I guess, what advice first would you give to, you know, young cyclists who, you know, they found they like the sport? So we're not talking about people who are taking it up, but people who've, you know, they've done it for a season or so, and they say, hey, this is really something I like. What advice or recommendations would you give to them, besides hiring you as a coach, of course, or hiring another coach? I will be the first to plug coaches. But what advice would you give them as they start to look at this sport?
First and foremost, I would say make sure you're having fun. You know, this sport is one of the hardest sports I know. It and I've played a lot of sports, and you can ask Kim. We have an entire locker room full of sports gear that she's still beating me and flogging me to get rid of, from all the sports that I've done in my life. And this is a tough one. It doesn't get easier. You know, you may win some races and it feels easier on that day, but the amount of preparation, i.e. training, it takes to get to that race day is mind-boggling as far as how much time you have to do it by yourself. You know, there's a lot of time where you've got to go out and you've got to do that training in lousy weather. You don't want to do it. You know, you'd much rather be doing something else, like playing a video game at the age of 15. And it's hard. You know, there's a lot of hard times to it. And I think that, as we were talking about earlier, you have to be honest with yourself and say, am I having fun? Especially as a 15 to 18 year old. It is a fantastic sport, and it's really rewarding. If it wasn't, I still wouldn't be here, if I didn't love doing it. But it's tough. It's something that you have to look inside and say, what's motivating me to do this day in and day out? And I think that it is challenging to a kid to say, am I doing this because I'm doing it for my parents' approval or my peers' approval of my peers? I think all that at some point has some relevance, but I think when you're first starting out as a teenager, just go out there and have fun. Make sure you're enjoying it. If you're not enjoying it, take a step back and ask why.
I think, throwing my two cents worth on this as well, is I think the other part about cycling too is that really makes it an appealing sport is there's so many varieties of cycling. We sort of throw cycling out there, and I think probably what most people think of right off the bat, typically, at least in terms of competition, is road cycling, because that does have the highest profile. But, you started out as a BMX racer. I know, our buddy Hunter Allen, who went on to become, a professional bike racer, started out racing BMX. And, you got the velodrome with, you got a kid who's a sprint, powerful kid. He's a big kid, looks like he could play, linebacker on the high school football team, doesn't have much endurance. And there's events on the track, that he can do. And the same for females as well, although they may not be playing linebacker on the high school football team. But that's that's a story for – that's a different, issue right there.
Different podcast.
Different podcast, yeah. We could talk about, Mangold, who just made the Olympic weightlifting team, and her playing high school football. But with that, there's the road, and there's mountain biking, and there's cyclocross, and I think I've hit all the major kind of forms of it. And I think there's and to try and dabble in those as much as possible. You may find you really like one, but you may be more suited in terms of competition for another discipline within the sport. And I think as a young cyclist, giving those a try if you can. The velodrome racing is a little tougher because there aren't many velodromes in this country, and odds are, you're not close to one. So that does make it a little bit more challenging. But I know USA Cycling has tried to expose some of the top level kids to the track, since there's a shorter path to the Olympics on the track than there is on the road or mountain biking. Although that's changing a little bit too, as they take events in and out of the games. But there are world championships as well.
I also think that your question, at least on the surface, although seems to be easy to answer, gets much more involved, because depending on the age of that junior and how many years that he or she has been riding, really changes the dynamic of where they should be focusing. Someone who's just getting into it, let's say it's a 15-year-old, is just getting into the sport, and is in their first year and is really loving it, they should be not necessarily, I would recommend that they don't only focus on cycling. Yes, it's fun.
Super and point. I agree.
They need to get out and play basketball, play football, soccer, do lots of stuff. Don't just focus on that one thing, because as and holy smokes, Barney King and I talk about this all the time, burnout is just so huge when you get a kid who's 15, 16 years old, and all of a sudden their whole life is cycling, and 2 years later they're done. Here's this kid who had phenomenal potential, look to be, the next superstar or whatever, and then you never hear from them again, because that was their whole life for 2 years, and they didn't go out and have other experiences with other sports and really just populate themselves with lots of different skill sets and experiences. Once you get older, then, and you get maybe more into the elite ranks, then yeah, maybe start that focus and that rifle approach as opposed to that shotgun approach. That's going to pay off a bit more, but not initially. Initially, get out there and do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we have had this discussion, and I think within our little circle of colleagues and friends about that, not wanting to focus on one thing, and sort of like you said, early specialization has been shown not to be the way to go in most sports anyway. There are some where that's an exception because the athletes tend to peak at a much younger age. But for most cyclists, you know, at least the endurance side of it, you know, you're talking about, you know, it's the mid-20s to, you know, early 30s. And now even beyond in some cases, people are kind of hanging on and still doing pretty well, you know, well into their 30s, which, you know, just sounds funny coming from, you know, someone who's a bit older than that. But, you know, that's still the case of you've got athletes there and doing it. With every go ahead. No.
Oh, it's good. I was just going to say, especially on the female side.
Yep.
You know, part of that, I think, maybe because they're coming into the sport later. Part of that because hormonal changes after childbirth. And there's a lot of good literature, which I'm sure you're up on it even more than I am, on that showing. And, you know, you look at a lot of the women who are giving birth to kids and then coming back and having some hormonal changes, and all of a sudden, you know, they're a whole new level from what they were on the endurance side. I think the role of women in sport is continually evolving too.
Yeah, it certainly changed. It, as you mentioned, and for folks who maybe aren't that familiar with cycling, typically the top women, at least in the U.S., tend to come into sport during college. That's where they seem to discover the sport. A lot of times it's because they were an athlete in another sport and they can't compete in that sport in college. Either they're not good enough to make the soccer team, and one of our top female cyclists probably, you know, we owe the soccer coach at Colorado College a great debt of gratitude for, you know.
Yes,
for,
we do.
For, you know, for cutting her from the team. You know, not quite a Michael Jordan situation being cut from the team, but, you know, Allison Dunlap, fantastic athlete. And I use that term broadly, and I think of an athlete as someone who, you know, is able to kind of walk and chew gum at the same time. We often joke about, you know, trying to watch cyclists play another sport can be painful. I would throw that with distance runners as well. Trying to watch them do another sport can be a lot that requires any kind of lateral movement is just kind of can be painful to watch. And so the women come into that sport in college and they're holding on. And then, you know, unfortunately the talent pool is a lot shallower. So, you know, women can hold on in the sport a lot longer just because there's not that. On the men's side, there's a 27-year-old who's pushing the 38-year-old out the door because 38-year-old just can't keep up. Whereas in cycling, we've had a lot of top women who are older and even, you know, making Olympic teams, you know, much later than you would sort of, than most people, I think, would sort of put them out at. But back to our young cyclists for a second. With almost every young cyclist, you get at least one of something coming with them, and that's a parent. In some cases, two, in some cases, more, and depending on the living situation. What advice can you give to the parents of young cyclists, and maybe even things that young cyclists can use, you know, to remind their parents of?
That's, you know, we could do a whole podcast right there.
Believe me, it's on my list of future podcasts to talk with people about parents and athletes in general. I'm involved with a group called the Positive Coaching Alliance, and that's a big part of what we do is trying to help educate parents of athletes. And I think that I'm sort of hijacking my own question here, but, you know, every sport has the, you know, little league parent or the beauty queen parent or the dance. There's one of the reality shows now of like dance moms or cheerleading moms or something. I can't remember. I saw an ad for it when they channel surfing, and it's about the moms of these, you know, little girls in this case who are, you know, they're over the top. And wow. We see it with little league dads mostly and things like that. I gotta admit, I was overwhelmed in the cycling world as I was in other sports, but I know they were out there. I got calls from them every now and then when I was at cycling of my kid's the next Lance Armstrong. Like, oh yeah, right, sure. And then you go up and look up their results, and you know they were finishing 30th out of a race of 35, and you go, really? I don't think Lance ever finished that far back. But anyway, advice that you can give the parents, because for a lot of times the kids get into cycling, but the parents may not have been cyclists themselves and don't really understand the sport, which has its advantages.
Yes.
I think. But anyway, so yes. Go. I'll let you answer the question I pose rather than me answering my own darn question.
Well, I think you're doing pretty good answering your own darn question.
Yeah.
I was probably just going to repeat everything you said, but that would be so good for the podcast, would it?
We reiterate, yes.
Oh, good thing we're friends.
From a coach out there who's working with junior athletes to those parents.
Well, you know, and I'm starting to see a theme or a trend in my own answers, ironically, but for me, a lot, especially for the juniors who are starting out, it's got to come back to they need to have fun, you know, and that can happen a lot of different ways. And parents can be, I've seen really, really great supportive parents. And I've seen, like you were talking about earlier, the soccer mom, the little league dad, where they won't get out of their kids' way. And I think at a certain point, you have to take a step back and let little Johnny decide what he's going to do, or little Sarah decide what she's going to do, and sort of let them go. And that's hard to do in cycling because it's not a mainstream sport, like you said, that a lot of parents really have a grip on what's going on and what it takes to actually compete in the sport. You know, a lot of times I've had many discussions with a junior's father where he was pretty traumatized that junior wanted to shave his legs. You know, I mean, it can be something as small or large as that, depending on who you are and how you approach that. To nutritional things, to cost involved in the sport, to travel time, to a thing that I'm a huge, huge advocate of, and I have a very big part of my initial interview with a parent who is looking to have me train their child, is we talk about their education. Mm-hmm. You know, if I make it very clear that from my side of it, their education is very important, and I want to make sure that whatever we're doing on the bike or having to do with the bike is not interfering with their grades. And so I set up that relationship with the parents early on, and I would encourage parents first off, obviously, to hire a coach, a good, you know, a coach that they can relate to and they feel has whatever qualifications that are important to them, which hopefully are somewhat standardized. But build a relationship with that coach and let your child develop with that coach. Let them have that relationship and sort of step backwards. It's very difficult, to use myself as an example. It's very difficult for me to coach a junior if their parents are always the go-between in the interim. You know, and in addition, that doesn't help the child build accountability or responsibility. Both of those two things are critical to success in cycling. Obviously, in addition to picking your parents well for endurance sports from the genetic side, but you know, they have to learn very early on to make certain decisions that will either help them develop positively or will ultimately have them, you know, get out of the sport because it's a sport that they find just isn't for them and they're not having fun or success in it or both. But I think having a parent realize that they need to let that child maybe go out and pursue the sport without necessarily looking over the shoulder the whole time. And that's not to say that you shouldn't obviously be very supportive of your child and interested in what they're doing. But cycling has enough stress, I think, in trying to do everything right, that gets a little bit more complicated when you have a parent that is a little bit overbearing, even more so than the team sport. You know, and we it's been glorified, I guess, for lack of a better adjective, the soccer mom title or the little league dad title. But we see that in the team sports, and so you've got this this approach by the parent that is dealing with an entire with their child in a team setting. And I think when you get that in the cycling setting, even though you have a cycling team on the road side or a team on the mountain bike side, it isn't the same interaction, and the stress is very difficult for a child to deal with, and be able to mature the way you want them to in their cycling career. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, I want to interject one thing in here, because you talk about the on the roadside there is a team, and there's certainly a team aspect, at least once you get – the riders have to get good enough to where the team really kind of makes a difference. On the mountain bike, you may be on a team, but really you're not acting as a team. To me, mountain biking is more like when I ran high school cross country and track and field. Well, it didn't matter if the rest of the people on my cross country team stunk. I could go out and win the race. Now, we weren't going to win any meets that way, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, my ability to win the race was not really dependent upon somebody else. Whereas, you know, basketball, football, things like that, you know, you could be the best player, but you could be on a lousy team, and it's just not going to happen. And on the road side, certainly, you know, the lower levels of cycling, lower categories, you can just be great and ride away from everybody, which you see happens in junior races too often. But there is a team component. I think one of the things that parents need to understand about cycling is that your kid's job that day may be to do something that's not going to let your kid's not going to be the first to cross the finish line, but they're going to help their teammate get there, and that they have to share in that glory of that team. And it's not quite as clear cut as it is in football, where, yeah, my kid's a left tackle, I know that he's got to throw these blocks in order for the running back to score. I think people, because football is so prevalent, understand that. I think for somebody outside the sport of cycling, and this is one, I came from outside the sport. I was a late adopter and late comer to cycling. It took me a while to learn that oh, yeah, okay, that guy who's hauling water bottles up at the bigger races, obviously pro-level races, he's doing a job. He is the left tackle for that team. And at the junior levels, where I think parents want their kids to be the winner and they want to see that success, they don't always see that their kid played a role in, you know, Billy going across the finish line first. Yet what Johnny was doing, you know, 10 miles from the finish really was a key to making sure that, I think it was Billy, won the race. And I think that's one of the things that educating parents about can really help. And if they come from a cycling background or they're cycling themselves, it makes it much easier for them. They understand that. But one of the things I wanted to do with cycling was how many junior racing license holders had parents who also had a racing license at one time or another. I was curious about that. Our database was not sophisticated enough to be able to do that search in an easy manner, but I was kind of interested to, I wanted to find, have someone take that data and make something of it. You know, there's information there and how to do that. If those kids seem to, you know, stick around the sport longer or not with that. But sorry, as usual with my questions, I often digress even more so than my my guest does. And with that, last comment. I got a couple of questions, and we're going to wrap up here.
I would say again, it comes back to the parents allowing their kids to have fun. Yeah. You know, you see, and this may have been a discussion I had with Kristen a while back, but it was something along the lines of parents should always strive to make sure that if their child leaves the sport of cycling, in this case, it's because they found because they found a new shiny toy to play with.
Yeah.
As opposed to leaving the sport because they hated the sport. You know,
yeah.
So there's this positive reinforcement thing. And, you know, cycling is a lifelong sport, which is great. You know, and the tangent that we won't go way out on, although it's one of my soapboxes, is the health benefit side of it. And being able to use that form of exercise to increase our health and stay healthy for a long, happy life. But there's so many positive aspects to having a parent encourage their child without over encouraging them to continue to have fun, and if they want to get better, they'll support them in how to do that without trying to look for those results, like you said, especially on the road cycling side, where the person who crosses the finish line isn't necessarily, if it wasn't your child, it's not because your child didn't do their job that day. Or didn't do what they were supposed to do in order to make the team get where they were. And the best term, I guess, that comes to mind when you were talking about the cross-country racing, because I raced cross-country in high school, junior high in high school as well, was like with mountain biking, it's basically a mass start time trial.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you got teammates, but like you said, realistically, everybody else could really, you know, stink that day, but you could still win the race.
Yeah.
May not win the meet, but you could still win the race.
Exactly. Okay. This is only the last point I'll make about the parents one is, I mentioned earlier, I worked with Positive Coach Alliance, and there's a video that we show in the sessions that we do of Doc Rivers, who's a very good NBA player, played for my beloved Atlanta Hawks for a while there, and is now the Celtics head coach. Well, his kid grew up playing basketball and finished his freshman year at Duke and hit the game-winning last-second shot against North Carolina this year. It broke my heart, but nonetheless, his son, a really good basketball player, has decided to turn pro after his freshman year at Duke and will be entering the NBA draft. Well, there's a clip of Doc Rivers talking about how he dealt with his kid after his kid would miss a big shot. And I'm sitting here watching this going, how intimidating would it be to be the coach of the kid whose dad has won an NBA, championship as a coach and has, how intimidating would that be? Like, okay, great. I can't remember Doc's kid's name. But anyway, you show up the first day of practice in high school and here's, Doc Rivers' kid is on my team. Oh, great. Am I going to have Doc Rivers looking over my shoulder and questioning every call? And from what I get from Doc Rivers and from this group, no, he didn't. He lets the coach coach his kid and kid talks about it with him when he wants to. And obviously having your dad, as an NBA player and stuff is a pretty good resource to have. And, I've often thought in terms of cycling with Taylor Finney, with his mom and dad both being, the first couple of cycling, I would probably give them that label. I'm not sure who else would compete against that. But and having a kid who, they didn't push in, and they actually have someone who was working on his training with him in Neil Henderson. And, advocating that, I know Neil, we talked about this, that Neil was a little very careful at the start of this and a little nervous, I think, a little tentative about coaching this kid whose parents were both great cyclists, Olympic medalists and stage winners of Grand Tours and things like that. And yet it seems that that's worked out really well, at least between Neil and Davis and Connie. And that, and Taylor is certainly thriving, having won a stage of the Giro, just I think the first or second stage, one of the early stages of the Giro with that. All right, so leaving that aside, parents, let your kids have fun. And Martin, as we wrap up here, talk a little bit about, I was going to ask you to talk about your coaching philosophy, but maybe if you can be real succinct with that, then I want to get to some training tips for folks.
All right, well, my coaching philosophy. I would say that I am probably very passionate. Well, not probably. I'm very passionate about trying to help people achieve the goals and dreams that they set. That's a big reason why I eventually stayed in. Not why I got in coaching. I mean, I got in coaching quite honestly as self-serving and a selfish reason. I wanted to get better. I got in for coaching myself. But then I found I really liked helping other people. Cycling, especially as a youth, it doesn't just help people develop physically, as far as getting into an athlete, but I think more importantly, it serves as a really good model, that we can use to build, a good moral compass or character, I guess, for people to travel through life. And I'm sort of addressing that more towards the juniors because, again, that's something that I started with and I hold dear and near to my heart. And I just think cycling teaches people how to get through life. It's a very good analogy, of running the parallels of the challenges you face in cycling to what you're going to do in life. I would love to see studies done or a study done. It'd be very difficult to, but I'd love to see a study done on people who become very successful cyclists, and once they get out of cycling, what they do as far as with the rest of their life. Because I think that people who don't quit and people who, you know, put their nose to the grindstone in cycling, they learn, you know, how tough that is. Well, it teaches them that they have to be responsible and accountable, and it just gives them this really great model for when they get older, what they're going to, how they're going to have to deal with, you know, adversity in their life. And I think that's a big philosophy of mine as far as trying to get people to where they want to be and, you know, sharing in that excitement and happiness of, holy smokes, you know, I just completed my first century, or I finally won my first race, or whatever that goal happens to be, or I lost 100 pounds because I've been riding for 6 months diligently and I didn't give up. Whatever that is, you know, those successes is one of my passions, is trying to get people to realize the value in those. So I guess that's probably in a short version of what it is.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And having known you for many years, and so I think that comes through in your passion for the sport and for coaching and for making coaching a better thing as well. All right, so I want to leave folks with, I want to give them some, a little bit of training, sort of concrete things they can do here. One of the things that, you know, we had talked about before we went on air here was something that I see with athletes regularly is the two questions that kind of pop up. And I hope folks in other sports who maybe listen to this can kind of maybe take what you say here and apply it to their sport. Is, you know, when, you know, assuming that I have the time to available to do this, and for masters athletes and even younger athletes, that's the typical thing is, I got X number of hours in a week to train, make me the best you can make me. But there are times where all of a sudden I can free up time because I decide I want to become better. I really like this. I'm going to give up this other thing over here. I'm going to give up the trumpet and really focus on cycling. And that gives me, you know, 4 more hours a week or something like that, you know, whatever it may be. And, you know, when, as a coach, when athletes do have more time available to train, what's your mechanism or what's your process for going through and saying, okay, it's time to increase your volume now, you know, again, assuming we can. We'll start with the volume one first.
Well, I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Oh, okay. Well, there'll probably be people who would appreciate that.
I don't want to give away all my trade secrets, right? And for anybody who knows me, knows that that's a joke because I usually talk too much. I think that personally and professionally for me, there's always a balance going on with my athletes, and that balance is between. With every athlete that I start working with, I draw up this little triangle and I call it the triangle of fitness. And I say, okay, there's 3 points that you have to address in your athletic world, so to speak. Nutrition, training, and recovery. And although you can get really good only getting 2 of those right, you can't get great. And we're going to take out of the equation genetics because they have no control over the genetic side. And if you can get all 3 right, then you're gonna be much further down the road. Whether that happens to be you're getting too much training and not enough recovery, or not enough, you can go out and hammer yourself and eat great, but if you never recover, you're gonna be overreached or overtrained very quickly, and that's not gonna work. You can conversely sit on the couch all day long and have great nutrition. But if you never get out and train, well, that's not going to do so well either. And so whenever I have an athlete who, and that actually happens more often than not, where they say, hey, by the way, my 80 hour a week at work just got reduced to 70 hours for the next month. What can we do? I look at how we're doing specifically on the training and the recovery or the dose response, because nutrition, although I have some control over it, it's more of a consulting control. And so if I'm writing a program, it's going to have to do more with the training and the specifics of that training and then how much recovery we're going to give that person. So that's the first thing I have to look at is, okay, where are we at in their training? in order to get a good picture of how are we getting to the goals that they've established. As far as volume goes, I will start incrementing it up as much as I feel based on the history that I have with that athlete that I can get away with. And a lot of times I'll push that envelope. And sometimes that's really good, and sometimes that is more of a, we're going to push it a little harder than we normally do because I want to see how your body responds. We need to figure out where your boundaries are. Yeah. And those change. You know, that boundaries change both on volume and intensity for each athlete. The stronger, the fitter they get. And, you know, I think if you start working with an athlete and you set up volume X and intensity Y, if you're not challenging those two boundaries 3-4 months down the road, then you're not doing a disservice to that athlete, because providing they're getting fitter and faster, like you're hopefully getting them, those targets are gonna move. So, did that answer the question?
I think so, and it'll kind of slide us into the second part, which is when does one know when to up the intensity of a workout? So, you know, you've been doing, you know, my favorite workout, you know, 2x20 minutes. At that lactate threshold, that functional threshold power in cycling, where it may be. And that's my favorite workout to give. It's my favorite workout to do. And there comes a time where it's, okay, I've been hitting 300 watts, and man, I can get through 300 watts now. You know, I've been doing this for a while. What's your thought process? And okay, then let's up that to, you know, let's up the intensity, let's up the power output, or even maybe make that 2x20 longer. I guess you can do it either way. And so what are your thoughts on when do you do that? And how should athletes make that progression and make that decision on when to up that intensity?
Well, I'm a big fan of testing. That being said, as our good friend Andy would say, testing is training and training is testing.
That is Andy Goggins' mantra, yes.
Yes, it is. So, being that he is a good friend and my science mentor in coaching, over the years, I've sort of adopted that as well. And I try not to take away too much time for specified training, because I think that, you can get around that. And specified testing, sorry. You can get around that. And as opposed to taking an entire week off and just saying, I'm going to test now to see if I've gotten better. And then giving up some fitness to do that. I think that, you know, it seems when you look at the literature that somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks is sort of like that magic window of, okay, if you're doing workout X to improve whatever it is, some energy system, 6 to 8 weeks seems to be about where you start to top out specifically for any type of return on that investment. And so depending on what time of year it is, whether we're like in a base season, although I really sort of hate to use that term, but let's say we're somewhat in the off season, if you actually have an off season, and you've been doing, say, those 2x20s for 6 to 8 weeks. If I haven't seen or heard from an athlete that, hey, these things are really starting to get easy, or I'm looking at race files and they're consistently putting out higher numbers than what I'm writing for them on those 2x20s based on whatever that threshold is, then I'll put in some tests during a week of training, and I'll just put them in there, so that, we can see some new numbers and see if in fact they are stronger. And hopefully every 6 to 8 weeks, depending on where you're at and what you're doing, you may see, if you're specifically doing, say, that 2x20, hopefully you're going to see that progression. You know, sort of the end result there is when you're doing that training, you're hopefully getting stronger. Or I guess when you get to our age, it's, I'm not losing it as fast anymore.
Yeah. And for many athletes, that's just it. I got to hold on. Yeah. I've got my late 40s and early 50s. I'm just hold on now. If I can lose only, you know, 3%, not 10%, I'm doing great. And with that, yes, that's a good point amongst the older age groupers for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I clearly, I can, to this sitting here, remember the time when the light bulb went on in my head a few years back, and I was like, wow, you know, I used to look at, okay, I want to get up to this number on my threshold and increase that every year, and all of a sudden it became very apparent to me, wow, I'm starting to fight just not losing it anymore. It's not that I'm trying to keep getting better. I'm just hoping not to get any weaker. You know, so and that's funny enough. I mean, we joke about it, but that is huge with my master's athletes, especially my 40s and 50s. You know, you're at that age, especially someone who's been doing it for, say, 15, 20 years, not necessarily at a very elite level, but just a competitive age grouper. And, you know, it's your type A personality who probably has a white-collar job, who has a family, has lots of commitments, is way, way overscheduled on their time, and is used to that. But also used to the fact that because of their age, at a certain point, they were still getting stronger just because, well, they probably had good genetics and some decent training in there. And now they're not seeing those gains. In fact, now they may be seeing no gains or losing that. And it's a you know, big concern. And it is a much bigger concern. When I first started dealing with it, it was a much bigger concern than I ever thought it would be. Because now you're, I don't want to say justifying, but you're having to have these serious talks with your athletes about, okay, the game isn't how much better we're going to get anymore. The game is how do we minimize what you have, or the losses of what you have. And that's a hard concept to get your head around, especially to those people who may be listening to this right now who are in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Who are saying, you know, who have no clue as to what we're talking about.
It's going to happen to you. We were in our 20s and 30s thinking, I'll never slow down that much. Yeah, you will.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I plan on living forever. So far, it's worked, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a sidebar on this one, and kind of a tangent on that is I met with my financial advisor a few weeks ago, and because, you know, you get this quarterly statement, and that particular, I guess in January I met with him because it was the December statement come, and, you know, my retirement fund had taken a big hit. And, you know, he brought all these numbers and showed me how, you know, well, this happens once every, I don't know, whatever, 10 years or something like that. You get this big quarterly drop and that's it. And then he showed me what my fund had done compared to others. And I hadn't lost as much as other people had, which isn't really comforting, but at the same time, it does put it in perspective. And it's the same thing to me with training and performance is that, yeah, I'm not as fast as I once was. I'm not even once as fast as I ever was. But, sorry, Toby.
And, I was trying to think of a good spin on to come out on you on that one.
Toby Keith, man. And it's like, okay, you're right. And now it's you know, let's just hold it together as long as we can, and then start looking for other goals. I think as we get older too, I think setting more reasonable goals and adjusting those goals become important, and for younger people as well, but that those goals may change of okay, I can't be as competitive in this area as I was, and that's why I move into this area now, and maybe trying new events for older athletes can be good to help kind of shake those things up and give them some new goals and something, particularly those people who are really super goal-driven with that.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
And you know,
last comment, and then we're going to wrap up because we're getting toward an hour here, and I usually like to keep these under an hour.
Well, then I will exercise my brevity and leave it at that.
Okay, we can always get back together at some point in time. So Mark Fazeski can be reached through Twitter at Coach M Faz. That's Coach M Faz, and he can also be reached at VantagioFitness.com. Am I right on that one?
You are.
Yep, and you can contact him through his email address on there as well. And you can follow future podcasts. Again, we are on Stitcher at Coach Chat, also iTunes with the same search. And I forgot to mention earlier that I am on Twitter, and I will start making that Twitter account a little more active at Coach Chatter. That's Coach Chatter is my Twitter handle. And so if folks have suggestions for other coaches in endurance sports or sports science folks, I'm going to start trying to do these about every couple of weeks, and hopefully this will become a regular thing for folks, and please tell your friends, and heck, tell your enemies about it too. So Mark, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to share your background and share your coaching knowledge with us, and hope you have a good rest of your time there in lovely Chattanooga, a well-kept secret.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the invite. Yep. Appreciate it.
All right. With that, thanks again, everybody. This is Sam Callen. Hope you have a great day.